This is the Mojo, the Meaning of Life and Business podcast, where life and business intersect. Hosted by Jennifer Glass, CEO of Business Growth Strategies International and BGSI Coaching. We are dedicated to your success. Welcome to another episode of Mojo, the Meaning of Life and Business. How many times have you thought about the idea that what you're doing online is completely safe? No? Really? Never? There's a good reason why so many of us feel that there's a lot that what we are doing online may not always be 100% totally safe. I mean, hey, you can go outside and you can get hit by a bus. You can get hit by a car. Or you can come right back home in the exact same position that you are in. It's just a matter of time, though, sometimes before something happens, whether we're online or in real life. So when we talk about internet crime, when we talk about identity, when we talk about protection, there's a lot there that we certainly run into a problem with potentially. And so I have a really great guest on the show today who's going to help us break that down, so that we have a little bit more of an idea on what exactly does all of it mean and how do we start protecting ourselves a little bit more and looking at it from different perspectives. But before I bring my guest on, let me tell you a little bit about him. Dylan Evans authentically shares the stories, realizations, and current journeys in business and personal growth. Professionally, he demystifies security and shows business leaders the easy and effective ways to stop internet crimes. Dylan, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm excited.
Absolutely, Dylan. Thank you. So, Dylan, let me first of all get right into the nitty-gritty here. Internet crime, why is it such a ridiculously big problem? I mean, we believe that we're safe. We look at that padlock on a website as an example, and we think that we're safe. Why is it? And I know that that's not even scratching the top of it.
Yeah, man, this is a great question. And this is, there's an open secret in the security industry that the things that are broadly trumpeted that you should do, like if you go on the internet and you say, how can I be secure? You get like a top 10 list, right? You always get a top 10 list when you search Google for how to do something. None of those work. None of those are very effective. But no one has a lot of incentive to say the things that truly do work. The information is out there. If you've been in the industry a long time, people get pretty frustrated. People get pretty burnt out because what they signed up for, which is like stopping bad guys, is not what they end up doing. And if you rise high enough, you end up mostly, I don't know, talking to executives and making them feel better.
Talking to the executives, making them feel better. I like that. So help me understand something though, because the FBI, as an example, here in the United States, is really working to secure our cyber infrastructure.
Yeah.
We hear all the time about ransomware attacks hitting hospitals, hitting schools, hitting governments, hitting critical infrastructure systems, the energy grid, water, nuclear, air, whatever it may be. And we realize that there's all of these potential problems that are out there. And we know that we are looking at other nations' weaknesses as well as them looking at us. And So we're always probing each other's networks to find where that link is that we can just get that little worm in and, you know, start really digging in and, oh, this looks interesting. Let's see what we can do here. And that looks interesting. I mean, We even had a leaked movie several years ago from Sony Pictures that supposedly wasn't leaked until they admitted, well, yeah, it was. So, I mean, all of these things are certainly out there. How, though, does
Yeah.
that start? First of all, the Sony Pictures leak, does that impact us as individuals? Forget Sony's bottom line, because of course it did make a difference. And nothing against Sony, and we're not calling out Sony for any negatives or anything, just merely saying this happened. But how do we, I mean, does it make a difference to us as individuals what happened to Sony?
No. And you hit on a great point that this is like the root misconception about this world, that you have to guard against the sorts of things that Sony does. You do not. If someone is going to go after Google or the US government, like their HR department got breached a couple of years ago by the Chinese government. And that is worth hundreds of thousands of dollars. It is, you can afford to spend, I don't know, many hours of some very highly skilled techno wizards for months in order to break into something. The return on investment for them doing that to you or I is pretty poor. If we don't have to be as strong, it's not worth it. Just like you, if you have a warehouse and you've got like it's full of, I don't know, furniture or something that you're a distributor for, it doesn't have to be Fort Knox because the threats against it are people with crowbars, not people with bombers. So thinking about what's really going to get me, how damaging it is it going to be to me, simplifies so much of this.
So, walk me through, please, as an individual consumer, what do we need to be focused on if it isn't the protections? Because, again, one of the things that we keep on seeing on TV ads, especially, there's a certain identity protection company that is advertising all of the time that there's another identity stolen every 3 seconds. How does all of that ultimately play into what we're doing? And I know that personally for me, I'm watching my identity reports and I'm constantly seeing that different stuff is out on the dark web because it was exposed in one breach and then another breach, and companies I don't even have relationships with were breached simply because they're working for businesses that are looking at the overall sales systems that they do. And so all of the transactions get thrown into the anti-fraud measure just to make sure that everyone is okay. And then ultimately they get breached. So then stuff is out there. Even if you're not a bad person, it just gets out there. So how does all of that start making a difference here?
I promise folks, Jennifer is not reading off a cue card, but that is like misconception number two. That your personal data is somehow going to be the enabler of significant crime. It's not. I can buy your social. I can most of the audience. I can buy their social online from some sketchy person, some sketchy data broker for a couple bucks. That's not that data is already out there. Cows have left the barn. It's not private anymore. Your checking account number is not private anymore. You write it on your checks. Your landlord has access to it. Anyone your landlord gives it to has access to it. It's not that secret. What stops people taking advantage of that against you and causing you harm is stopping them from using it. So, for instance, one of the bigger pain points in consumer identity theft is taking out loans in other people's names. And as you know, like if you get on the wrong side of debt collection, they're never going to hang up the phone. They're just always going to follow you. And if someone some credit card company makes is fast and loose with identity verification and issues a credit card in somebody else's name, they don't pay, so they try to come after you. Somehow that's your problem to solve, right? That's the painful part. This is easily fixed. You just, and it'll take you 20 minutes. You guys do it tonight. This is the easiest thing you can do as a consumer. Just freeze your credit. You can get a little app on your phone from Equifax and Experience, and you'll switch it over for when you want to actually take out a credit card and or a home loan or something. They run the credit, they pull it, and you lock it back in again. This is going to eliminate more than half of your risk for most people. Takes 20 minutes.
So let me ask you a different direction. These criminals that are buying these stolen identities, or they're selling them. I mean, they're being incentivized by someone to do that, whether it's their boss or it's a national state actor who's looking at doing certain things. I mean, we even know the phone manufacturers have started putting in even more secured systems, just in case you think that you're going to be one of these victims of state espionage, so that we can lock down the phone even more. But
Sure.
how does all of this, and again, I mean, talking about the phone, we are, and one of the other guests that I had on the show, he was mentioning that Robert Kerbeck, who is the author of Ruse, and he was all about the corporate spy world that he was
Sure.
in.
Yeah.
And so he was calling up places, and he was saying, he was Herr Schmidt from the Frankfurt office, as an example. And everyone was just giving him the information because Herr Schmidt needed to get everything that the company had because the regulators were at the Frankfurt office. But how does that start coming back and changing today?
Yeah. If Vanguard sold a mutual fund of crime rings, like in Eastern Europe, and I was less ethical than I am, I would buy it.
Okay.
Sorry.
It definitely
My
makes a big difference.
So the reason is, sorry, I got frozen there for a second. The reason is they have been getting 40% year over year growth. They have been going gangbusters. But like any other industry, it's a supply chain. You got different companies that are stealing the information. They sell it to people who are like marketplaces or brokers. And then other people are good at monetizing that information. Maybe they run a call center, and you got different players of different levels of sophistication. The super unsophisticated folks hire low wage workers to call your grandma and pretend to be you in Mexican prison and say, "Grandma, I need $4,000." And even if the guy has an Indian accent or a Filipino accent, your grandma might fall for it. The guy you talk to, he represents the higher tier, the more white glove service, where the information to sneak your way, to pretend to get into a company is more valuable, and his skills are more valuable, but the potential payoff is a lot more valuable. So they're going to be running real high touch operations by artisanal scammers.
Right.
It's a question of what's your what's who's going to come after you? For most of us, we're not special. We're not special enough to warrant that white glove service. I don't have any really saleable secrets. I don't have any nuclear launch codes. I don't know about you, but probably most of your listeners don't either. So you mostly have to worry about just the drive-bys, the getting fished, getting a call from, you know, one of the less reputable phone companies that lets scammer call centers connect to them.
So let me ask you, because you mentioned the phishing attempts. I get so many emails every day. Thankfully, mm-hmm. some of them have started because I toughened up my exchange quarantine system. And mm-hmm. so some of them started getting stopped there. But there's still a ton that still get through. And yes. it's amazing how some of them get through. And then on my Gmail account, I have a whole bunch that are still getting into my inbox too. Simply because Google isn't seeing it yet as spammy. It's like written out to me, but it's not me. It's to someone else and everything else. But when we look at that, I mean, what are some of the things that we need to be taking into account so that we can avoid being one of those statistics of, well, you just had your identity stolen or
sure.
money, whatever it may be?
Yeah. I got two answers, but underneath both of them is a realization, and that is nobody's top priority is security, right? This is a lie that some people in the security industry tell themselves, that if everybody just cared about it like me, we wouldn't have all these problems. But I mean, you got doctors, you got lawyers, you got cooks. They care about what they care about. And if the solution to them not being defrauded is they need to get hip to whatever, you know, the how to recognize phishing, it's a pretty bad strategy. It's even if you train them up right now, all the indicators are going to change in 2 years and it's not going to work anymore. No, there's a better way. The first is using a reputable email provider. You get substantially more value by using the G Suite with the recommended defaults or Office 365, because they get so much spam, they can track it in real time. And they have a great data set for knowing who's spamming. And they can shut it down. If you don't like either of those companies, you go to Proofpoint. They're like Proofpoint sells a nice little third-party filter, and they get at least as much spam through their engines as Google or Microsoft. The next thing you can do. Let's get a password manager. And a password manager is great because if you get a phishing email and it's like 7 a.m. on a Saturday and you've got your coffee and it hasn't kicked in yet and you're just clicking through and you're like trying real hard to hammer through it, and you get it, you fall for one of them. It comes from your bank and it's like it's a good one, and you click it. And you click to do whatever thing they're scaring you into. If you have set up your password manager and you have done it the right way, that is, you don't know any passwords. They're all just random strings of gibberish and only your password manager knows them. So you can't type a password even if you wanted to. The password manager will notice that the link is different than the one for US Bank or Capital One or wherever the scammers are trying to pretend to be from. And it won't fill, it won't work. So this is a click-through session hijack, a password stealing attack. This is the most common way that phishing can be used to defraud people. And a password
Andy Cohn, by the way,
manager.
from the Bravo Network, not to interrupt you, but Andy
Yeah.
Cohn fell victim to this exact scam too.
Yeah.
So
I
it's
mean,
not like you have to be one of the slower folks, if you will.
no.
Even big people fall victim all the time too.
Yeah. If you read like interviews by former cult members, they tell an interesting story. They say, everybody looks at you and says, how could you possibly get sucked into a cult? And they say, but they're thinking of themselves. Their self-identity is them at their best. They're most emotionally strong, their highest sleep, they're confident in who they are and what they want out of life. Everybody has low moments. And a cult gets you when you're at your lowest. And that's kind of the deal with security too, is the hits are just going to keep on coming, and you don't get to pass during your low moments. You still got to click those, you got to read those emails during your low moments. So you are only as strong as your lowest moment. That's who you, that's the you have to guard yourself against. And so it can happen to anybody, no matter how celebrated.
Let me ask you a different question. Is it better to fail fast here and know that something happened and learn, or is it better to keep trying just to live another day?
This is the eternal debate. So, part of the goofiness of how the security industry ended up like this, with so much of its prescriptions not really credible to most people, is this history in corporate America where security and IT in particular were blamed. Blamed for everything that could go wrong and never credit for when things went right. If your GM or your sales manager took credit, if the big risk paid off and you got blamed if the ri big risk went belly up, you can be sure that's how you create a department of no. And so there's this DNA in IT and the tech and older school sides of the tech industry of defensibility. This works for people, even if they aren't aware of it. This is how you survive as a business, either supplying like software or services or something, or just in-house in a department. And so this created an incentive structure where everybody, there was no reason not to delay another month and be more sure that everything would go well. So you ended up with these very slow organizations that were afraid to fail. Any failure would look bad to them. And you can imagine, like, sounds like a scary, unhealthy place, right? And in the midst of this, like in like 2010, there was a couple people who came out of like software development, which is a little more important. You got to move faster, otherwise, your competitors will beat you to the features. And they said they stole some of those ideas, and they said, it's not working. You gotta speed up. You gotta speed up, and you can't be afraid of failing. And the book is called The Phoenix Project. If the nerds out there want something else to read, it's a fantastic read about culture and incentives. But it has since, in the last 14 years, transformed most IT industries to and security teams, the cyber, techno cyber teams, into teams that are less afraid to fail, that perfection is not possible.
And I love that how it just transformed into perfection is not possible. Yes. So, Dylan, let me ask you, as we're looking at where we are, and you said that the one thing is, if I understood where you are, do what you can to stay safe. Understand that everyone is at risk somehow. You just may not be as at risk as an example, the chief of staff at the White House. But is there anything else that we need to think about as it relates to crime on the internet that may or may not keep us awake at night? Or maybe that should keep us awake if we really understood what we don't know.
I'm not going to lie, there's significant risk here. I mean, I think we've all had our credit cards stolen and, have been surprised to see those unexpected charges. And then maybe we go back to debit cards for a while or just writing out checks. Security, kind of like finance, is a game of many details done well. And I would say most of us are not good and don't want to be good at all the details here. The winning strategy is to find a platform or system that is well respected, offload everything onto it that you can, and get on with your life. So for instance, credit cards are fantastic for paying stuff. I can call my credit card company up 18 months later and say, oh, that charge was fraudulent. And they'll say, okie dokie, and they'll take it off. They'll eat it. For your bank account, if you get defrauded, you have to report it to them within a week. And so there's a really big difference in terms of liability for you because nobody wants to check their bank statements every week. That's a terrible idea. That's a terrible use of your life. So there are easy wins. I'm not sure we have enough time to talk about them here because there are so many for so many different situations. If you have two takeaways, go freeze your credit tonight and cancel your debit card. Go use credit cards if you can. That'll probably cover you 80%. Oh, and actually set the PIN, set a random PIN when you file your taxes or make your accountant do it, because that is the third most common way people get defrauded is someone running off with your W-2 and filing a fraudulent tax return, and then you have to go argue with the IRS about whose fault it is. No fun.
Oh, it's never any fun when you have to do that. And I know even having to get the taxpayer ID number with the IRS that I needed to get was certainly even worse of a problem in terms of just trying to deal with that. I mean, it was absolutely insane in terms of what happened. But let me ask you, there's certainly a lot here that we can continue to unpack. But for people, though, that want to reach out and connect with you, how can they connect with you to know more of what they would need to do?
We're on social, not Twitter anymore. But most of the rest, I think we are now creating a content engine that just in 24, one of our goals is to demystify all of these misconceptions that you can protect your data, that encryption matters, that you have to follow a list of good ideas to be safe. There are so many. If you want to hear more about these, yeah, just subscribe. I think most of it's coming out on LinkedIn right now, but we're expanding. Simple Salt is the name of our company. Mostly, we do not, even though we do demystify, the folks we help best are companies with something to lose. So usually, if your dentist loses your I don't know, your filling or your x-rays or something, that information, I don't care. Do you care?
Here in the sense that medical records still have a lot of value in the public. And I mean, medical ID numbers are certainly being misused. And
Sure.
every time I get a new explanation of benefits that I'm not expecting, I'm like, what was
Yeah.
that for? Because,
Right.
I'm looking at that. But yes, I mean, so. In that sense, if my dentist loses my x-ray, I'm certainly going to care. Unfortunately, we know that that's one of the ways they identify people. So that may
I
have been,
actually,
the wrong way of looking at it, but yeah.
yeah, it doesn't matter. Like, I'll tell you, since all that in, like, all the easily, all the information there that's easily turned into money is already there, saleable from a data broker for a couple bucks. Mostly, all that's left is what your teeth look like. Not very valuable to a crime ring, right? How are they going to monetize that? Let's take the other example. Let's say my divorce lawyer, I'm not getting divorced, but for the sake of argument, if my divorce lawyer loses my file, everything under attorney-client privilege to criminals, and they decide to ransom us, and if we don't pay, they're going to post it to Facebook. That's my life. That's like every, that's 99% of what I care about right now. I might roll my eyes at my dentist, but I'm going to stab my lawyer. He betrayed me. There's a big difference in different kind of businesses' risk. If you're a tire shop, you get defrauded, worst case happens, you might lose a month of revenue because that's how much you got laying around in the bank. But if you are a reseller, and you're selling $3 million contracts on a 6% margin. If your bank account gets drained in the wrong week and you don't notice, you might be out of business. So it really depends. And we help the folks with a lot to lose find the creative ways to protect themselves, and evaluate those options against the usually more expensive traditional techno wizardry ones that are usually recommended.
Thank you. So again, go to what was the website again?
Simple-salt.com.
Simple-salt.com. So make sure that you go to simple-salt.com, connect with Dylan on LinkedIn as well. The information, of course, will be in the description here for you so that you can make sure that you're not missing anything. But reach out to Dylan, see what you can be doing. And as Dylan said, when you go to sleep tonight, think about those things that you can do to make it a little bit more secure for you so that somebody is not going to want to find you. So, Dylan, once again, thank you so much for being my guest on the show today.
Thanks, Jennifer.
Absolutely. Thank you. So, wrapping up, when we think about what it is that we're doing, we need to really be looking at how we look at our own identity, how we look at our protection while we're doing things online, how we really focus on do we know the things that we even need to be doing? If you can just even look on Google, how can I learn how to spot a phishing email? Just to start. Because if you know some of the things to be looking out for, it's going to be one of the better things for you. As Dylan said, using password managers, you also can prevent some of those from happening when you are using strong enough passwords. And by strong enough passwords, think about the 24, 32, or longer characters in those passwords, especially with lots of symbols, because it's going to take a lot longer for somebody to try and crack. And usually it's not going to be worth it for them to even be doing that. Even in your password manager, if you can think about using a stronger master password, take your favorite line from your favorite novel and look at how you can use that as your password. Just change out the vowels or anything that looks like it can be replaced with a number and use it in that regard so that you can be even better, safe, safer, better, safer, be even better as you're going through what you're trying to do. On that note, once again, Dylan, thank you again for being my guest. Until next time, this has been another episode of Mojo. And until next time, here's to your success.
This has been another episode of Mojo, the Meaning of Life and Business podcast. If you like what you heard, please consider leaving us a review, liking us, or reaching out to us. You can contact us at bgsicoaching.com and let us know what you think. Thanks so much again for listening.